All right, we're going to do it together.
And this is not original to me. I borrowed this out of a book that I'll make reference to in a little while, so I don't want you to think that I was out to get you. So question number one, some of the items on my lengthy to-do list could be delegated to a family member or a coworker, but A, I don't ask anybody because I don't want to impose. B, I feel kind of awkward about it, but I eventually let people know I need help. C, I don't hesitate to ask people for help. Or D, I don't see the point of asking because hardly anyone can do the job as well as I can do it myself. So circle one, we'd like you to be honest. Circle one. Most likely, most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time. Number two, my family members, friends, and coworkers tell me that I'm sometimes critical and hard to please. Never, sometimes, frequently, all the time. Honesty would be good. Number three, when I've taken the time to make plans for an evening with friends and then they want to change what I have arranged, A, I don't say a word about it and I'm happy to go along without making a fuss. B, I let them know my feelings, but I eventually change my attitude and go along with it. C, I make it clear how hard I work to pull everything together and try to convince them to see why my way is better. Or D, I make my stance known and don't budge. Number four, when I'm having a disagreement with the sales clerk, I A, swallow my words and give in just to avoid the conflict. B, work to resolve it as quickly as I can. C, fight for my point even if it takes some time. And D, I often go to the mat to win and show why I'm right. I mean, it doesn't have to be a sales clerk. It could be anybody. How do you handle when you disagree? Number five, when I'm in a hurry and a driver in front of me is driving especially slow, causing me to miss green lights, I A, take the time to slow down and enjoy the ride. That's me. B, I hope he turns off the road so I can get going. That was a little humor, by the way. C, I get very frustrated and do whatever I can to pass him. Or D, I ride his bumper, flash my lights, honk, give him a dirty look when I go around him. Slow down and enjoy the ride. Depends on who's in the car with you. Okay, I understand. Most likely, most of the time. That's how we're taking this. Number six, I'm taking a long overdue vacation with a few friends. When it comes to making travel arrangements and planning our days, my style is to A, let my friends do the planning and go with the flow. B, offer a couple of suggestions, but remain spontaneous. C, think through things like where we want to eat and on what day and plan accordingly. Or D, read up on where we're going, schedule each day ahead of time, purchase tickets well in advance to avoid potential hassles. You look so serious, guys. This is meant to be humorous. Number seven, in thinking how people succeed in life, I go with the flow, see what happens. I think it's good to have goals, but everyone has his or her own style. C, I don't understand people who don't have vision for what they can do. And D, I have little patience for those who simply drift off without direction. It occurs to me you can see the dots on here where I took it. I should have erased those. I should have erased those. Ah, honesty's good for the soul. I just spent 20 minutes at the office doing absolutely nothing. I feel A, justified, B, energized, C, grumpy, D, guilty. That could be 20 minutes at home, too. It doesn't have to be at the office. Number nine, when someone borrows a video from my neatly organized collection, could be anything, doesn't have to be a video, and doesn't put that video back in the right order, it A, doesn't bother me, B, I'm just happy the person returned it, C, I put the video back the way I want it, make a mental note to tell the person where I like it to go, or D, I show the person how to do it right and say that the next time he or she borrows it, I want to return it to the exact place. 10. When an important project I've been working on is not going the way I want it to, I shrug it off because nothing is really that important. I do something else and come back to the situation with a clear mind. I'm all over the problem, but do my best to leave my worries at work. I can't let it go. I worry to the point it keeps me up at night. When it comes to paying bills in the house, I don't have anything to do with it. Doesn't matter who does it, as long as it gets done. I do it myself, if time allows, or review the job if it was done by someone else. Or D, I always do it myself because I want to know exactly where the money is going. If you're single, that's easy. Number 12, I'm reading a book on being a control freak because A, someone gave it to me and I'm not sure why. B, I am primarily concerned with finding ways to cope with the over-controlling people around me. C, I know I have controlling tendencies and hope the book might help me. And D, I've read through a few parts I think that are best, just to be in the know and don't give much weight to the ideas I disagree with. Okay, so score it up. Give yourself 1 point for every A you circle, 2 for every B, 3 for every C, 4 for every D, and then we'll look at your total. 1 for every A, 2 for every B, 3 for every C. Four for D like dog. So this particular author gives a little scoring scale on the back of your thing. If you score 13 or fewer, you aren't anywhere close to being a control freak. In fact, you may benefit from taking a course on assertiveness training. Score 14 to 22, you are probably pretty easygoing and rarely battle the control freak that's inside. 23 to 35, and you can tell I got a 35 because I underlined it. You certainly have some control freak symptoms and can be diagnosed with occasional control freak flare-ups. The following chapters will help you. And 36 or more, you have a full-blown case of control freak flu and can benefit from the rest of the book. So, how did you do? How many do we have that need assertiveness training? You're in the 1 to 13 category. Anybody? You still adding? It takes a long time to get up to the high numbers, I know. How many in my category, that 23 to 35? Oh, good. I'm in good company. Yes. All right, I won't ask the rest because we don't want to embarrass anyone. But you know what? Today's lesson is one of our drippings. And I'm going to give it to you in just a second. Keep your... In fact, it's in your notes on the second page. The Control Freak by Les Parrott. Anyway, we've been looking at the drippings, the constant, quarrelsome, frustrating, meddling kind of woman that's not a lot of fun to live with. And we've looked at a couple of different things. And today I thought we'd look at the one that our culture anyway would call a control freak. This is a person who wants to control their environment. And they're going to do just about anything necessary to get it. And the purpose of the quiz was really to say all of us probably have some degree of that in us. And given a situation or a scenario, whether it has to do with at home or at work or people that are friends or maybe a relationship in your family, it may be more or less depending on that relationship. I don't think anybody is all one thing or another at all times. But the root of being a control freak we're going to talk about at the end, and I think that's the most helpful part. So if you're laughing at yourself a little bit right now, that's okay. We'll hopefully give you a prescription before we're done. I read an interesting illustration about someone that I thought made me smile. And then after I smiled, they went, you know, I'd probably do that if I could. Here's the illustration. It's a Bill Gates illustration. And probably no surprise that he is a high-tech control freak. Here's what's happened. Apparently, Bill Gates does not like clutter. And he built a home. Let me back up and say this. Outside of Seattle, he built a home, a 600-acre tract on the shore of Lake Washington, a sweeping view of the Seattle skyline, snow-capped Olympic Mountains, at a cost of over $50 million. And this was probably 15, 20 years ago. It's no surprise that he went completely berserko, these are my words, to control his very environment. So he, for example, does not like any electrical outlets showing. So he doesn't like clutter. He didn't want electrical outlets showing. He had them all removed. There's a 70-foot wood column that support his roof in the entryway. They're supposed to look like logs in a lodge, except that he made sure that they were sanded absolutely perfect to a satin finish. In fact, all the timbers throughout the house are nearly flawless in that none of them have any knots. All of the bolts throughout the whole house are stainless steel and are all oriented in one direction in the entire house. He apparently had a cedar tree on the property that, in his opinion, was not located quite right, so he had it moved the entire tree 6 inches. That particular tree and all the other trees on his property are electronically controlled 24 hours a day by a computer. If the soil around it gets too dry, it adds just the right amount of water. And speaking of water, apparently Bill Gates likes bathtubs, and so his bathtub, the master bathtub, can be filled to the right temperature and a precise depth by Gates as he drives home from work. So he's got some sort of a something he just pushes, and his tub is ready when he gets home. Look, the thing is, I laughed at that and went, yeah, I could probably do some of that if I could pull it off. You know, the drive home thing, that wouldn't be bad. You know, heat up the oven, make the dinner appear on the plate. I don't know what I could do, but I'd probably try. Which enters the discussion at a good point. Is wanting control a good thing or a bad thing? Let's pause a minute. Is wanting control in your life a good thing or a bad thing? I see some goods. Depending on the situation. Depends on what you want to control. As long as you acknowledge God is ultimately in control. I think that the concept of being a control freak has gotten a few slams over the years, as if wanting control is always bad, and it definitely is not. I'm in that dead spot again. So we'll move closer and be more friendly here. They did a study with infants, and I found this study kind of interesting. They took three groups of eight-week-olds. 8-week-old infants. Each infant was provided with a special air pillow that responded to the pressure of their head, and it closed a switch. In one group, they call them Group A, a mobile of colored balls was hanging over each of the infant's crib, and it spun for 1 second whenever the pillow was pressed. So there's a little mechanism in the pillow, and if the infant pressed the pillow, the mobile spun. In group B, the mobile would spin, but its spinning did not depend on the infant's action. So it just spun every now and then. I guess somebody was in the room pushing a button, and every now and then it would spin. And group C, they had a stable environment, no mobile, and they experienced neither movement nor control. What was interesting is the infants of group A, having learned that they could control the movements of the mobile, demonstrated their knowledge by gently increasing the number of times that they would press the pillow. And the infants in the other groups did not. Group A was the only group in which every infant, 3 or 4 days into the experiment, was smiling and cooing. They liked having control. There's nothing wrong being young or old in controlling our circumstances in the sense that it brings pleasure. I don't think there's a person I know that likes chaos. They may like flexibility, they may like spontaneity, but they don't like chaos. There is an element of control that is healthy. If not, why do you ask your child to make his bed every morning? Or throw his dirty clothes in the clothes hamper? Or put his backpack by the front door so it's easily accessible every morning? All of which you should do with all of your children. Why do we do that? Just because we want a controlled environment? No, because a certain element of self-control is so important. Controlling our environment in a certain way at certain times for certain reasons is healthy. And without it, it's not healthy. I think the issue again is that it's when and how the control is exercised. It's self-control that's the issue. Not controlling everyone else. Let's look at a couple of verses to get our thinking going this morning. Proverbs 16, let's go there first. Proverbs 16:32. Now you have very serious looks on your face today, so either we're in deep water with you already, or you're all asleep, so one or the other needs to change here. Yeah, or you're controlling your reactions so as to not let me know that you're really a control freak like me. 16:32, better a patient person than a warrior, and one with self-control than one who takes a city. So typically in our culture, someone who took a city, that was a warrior, that was in charge, got it all done, made it happen, we would applaud them. But what the Bible's saying is, wait a minute here, a little self-control is a good thing. Turn over to chapter 25 and verse 28, still in Proverbs 25:28. Same concept taken from a different perspective, like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. So I'm agreeing with those of you that said being in control is neither good nor bad. The issue is when and how that control is exercised. The problem, though, is that for some people, and I love this quote, I've got it right there for you, it seems easier to be God than to love God, and easier to control people than to love people. None of us want to be in that environment. None of us want to be that kind of person. None of us want to be someone that no one wants to be around because things are so locked up. So let's look at some qualities of the control freak and see which ones you might identify with. First, and these are out of his book, and I found them helpful. The first one was, these people are generally obnoxious. Now we're obviously taking the nth degree, the worst expression of it. The Latin word for hurtful is noxious. So someone who is obnoxious is hurtful. Fromm has a quote here, selfish people are incapable of loving others, but they're not capable of loving themselves either. That's the problem with the control freak, is that they tend to be so obnoxious, the environment isn't nicely organized, it's so controlled, nobody can live in it. There's a difference between having a neat and orderly home and having a home where nothing is allowed to be out of place. You know, there is such frustration with the structure of the home that no one really lives. Obnoxious. When we're on that edge, we're sort of acting like, and I picked out some examples. Poor Jacob could have fit most of the examples in this lesson. Jacob's name means conniver, and he's on the obnoxious end many different times. And he is so desiring to get it his way, to control every environment. And if you read his life, you know, he steals his brother's birthright, and then he steals his brother's blessing, and then you know, he's nasty to his father-in-law and cheats him out of a bunch of his sheep, and then he's this, and then he's that, and then he's those. Jacob is obnoxious. I doubt that very many people wanted to be around him. In the extreme, a control freak is not a pleasant person to be with. And in a home where the wife and mom is such an extreme, nobody wants to be around there. Another example is tenacious. But it's tenacious gone amok. Another word for tenaciousness is being stubborn. And I put in your notes that the control freak's code is don't ever, ever, ever give in. I have a situation this morning that just occurred, and I'm in the right, doggone it. But if I hold to I'm in the right, I'm going to offend somebody. I know it, I know it, I know it, I know it. But I'm right. So you need to pray that I go handle it without being right.